Do you want a drink?
Yeah, sure, White Russian.
There's a special rung in hell reserved for people who waste good scotch.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
Try the wine.
You slip me a bottle of bourbon, a little glass, and some ice.
It comes in pints?
Oh, I'm getting one.
I drink, and I know things.
Hi, welcome to episode 15 of Ruminations. This is our Halloween episode where we want to talk about a few movies we've seen, a few shows we've seen. So my name is Chris. I'm here with Steve.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Steve. I'm also enjoying a Ring Pop at the moment,
which I've had on my dresser for 3 months. I got it at a wedding expo, and I just did not eat it.
It's so good.
What flavor is it?
Purple.
Which is what, grape?
I think so.
It's like the artificial grape.
Yeah, it's purple flavor. Yeah.
It's riveting content so far.
Yeah. So, Steve and I have seen a few movies that have just come out recently. We've also finished... So, I guess the movies that we've seen are... The Many Saints of Newark, we've seen Dune, we've seen, what else have we seen? Shang-Chi and the Ten...
Legend of the Ten Rings.
Legend, silly me. Legend of the Ten Rings. God forbid I said the Ten Rings.
And The Last Duel.
And The Last Duel. And then we've also seen a few shows that we want to talk about.
Yeah, so we want to... So the focus of this episode will be mainly Netflix's new miniseries, Midnight Mass. But we also want to talk about Squid Game, which is now the most popular thing in the world and like all of human history. So, but before we get to the Netflix portion of the show, so we just want to give some brief, you know, comments on the various things we've seen. So we're now a few days removed from seeing Dune, which was delayed for like a year and a half because of COVID.
I thought it was going to come out in December, and I was going to say it, like, I still keep thinking it's going to come out in December, but I saw it, so I shouldn't think that anymore.
I almost had a joke with myself where I tried to read Dune a half dozen times over the last, I don't know, I don't think I started reading it in college. I think it was over the last 5 years, but especially since I heard the movie was coming out, I think I have 3 copies of the book. I don't know how.
Do you?
Yeah, well, I just gave one away. But I had a like really, really old library copy that I got for free years ago. Then I had one my dad had, and then I bought the Barnes & Noble Fancy Edition.
I have the nice Barnes & Noble Fancy Edition.
And all 3 editions, I made it to maybe the second chapter the first 5 times I tried to read it. And then finally, in the last few months, I've read, I think, up to chapter 5. If you could hear thunder, it's currently, we're in the middle of another storm. So my experience with Dune was I was very bored. And then when I wasn't bored, I was kind of confused.
I
just couldn't get into it. And I took out the audiobook from Audible and I listened to maybe 2 or 3 chapters. And I said, okay, this is at least more engaging because they have a voice cast. And then I think I was about 25 minutes in and I noticed, there's no descriptors. They're not saying Paul said the Baron. It's just the voices. So then I did some research and I read that, it's not actually the full audiobook, which I think you find fault with.
Well, because, so I read, I don't know. I probably read as far as you read on my own in Dune, maybe a little less.
Like 20 pages.
No, like 50.
Okay. Well, yeah, I made it
50 or so pages. I hated it. 51. I thought it was dull as dirt. It should be called dull, not Dune. But I like the aesthetic of Dune.
Except there is no aesthetic to Dune because
right, but I'm talking about the book art cover and stuff. I also wanted to read Dune because it's like, I don't know, one of the grandfathers of sci-fi. The desert world of Dune is Arrakis, I don't know how the purists would pronounce it, but and George Lucas put Tatooine in the Arrakeen, like, system, planetary system in Star Wars. So, like, I know that it has influences on Star Wars and things like that. So I always wanted to read it. So I tried to read it, and it defeated me. So I listened to the audiobook, and I still thought it sucked. And then you came along, you're like, well, you didn't read the real... You didn't actually listen to the whole book. I'm like, well, fuck off, because I did.
And what was your opinion of it once you listened to the whole thing?
So I'm referring only to the book now.
Yeah.
I hated it. I think it sucks. It's so boring. I had no idea what was going on. By the end of it, I was just pushing through just to say I did it. However, I really liked the movie. And I was hoping to like the movie. I thought the movie was very good. So it's I'm not a
Dune hater.
Yeah, I'm not a Dune hater. I'm a I'm a Frank Herbert hater.
Well, I now, after seeing the movie, I do want to read the book, and it's now been 3 days and I haven't touched it once, so it shows that I probably will not get too far. But the movie won me over. I like the director, because I really liked Blade Runner 2049, Sicario, Arrival, I thought was pretty good. He's definitely one of the better directors working today, especially because he works with really great cinematographers. All his movies look like $100 million. And seeing Dune in IMAX, it was pretty incredible.
It was very loud.
Yeah, but I wanted it to be loud. No, I wanted my soul crushed by the loudness.
It was.
And yeah, everything about it was great. The only complaint I have is that they filmed an entire movie and then sat on it for 2 years. Not their fault because of COVID, but they didn't greenlit part two, let alone start filming it. Like, part two might not happen. And they advertised the whole movie as Dune, when it's really Dune.
Right.
It's really half of Dune.
Yeah, I didn't know that at the time until, like, I think the day before we saw it, you said, oh, it's not actually the whole movie, or the whole book.
Well, I didn't know until I saw people who had seen it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in the first 30 seconds, you realize they say Dune, and then it says part one.
Right.
So it's, they left that off all the ads for 2 years.
Right, and most of the convenient trailer is from, like, the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. Which I think trailers should be like that. Like, you didn't see No Time to Die, but No Time to Die's trailer is basically entirely from the first 15 minutes of the movie. And it's just better that way, because you watch the trailer a bunch of times if you're obsessed, like I was with James Bond, and then you see the movie and you're really surprised.
Right.
So
I liked it, though.
I thought it was fantastic. I still don't like Timothy Chalamet. And I did see him in person. Like, I went to an event. My sister really liked him. And I went to a special screening in the city of Beautiful Boy. It was about drug abuse. And Steve Carell was his dad. And they were both there with the director of the movie. I don't know who the director was. But I was in the second row, so I was within spitting distance of Steve Carell and Timothy Chalamet. And
I didn't mind him in the movie.
He's fine. I just don't... There's just something about him that I don't take seriously.
Well, our friend Mike, who loves Dune, so when I, quote-unquote, read the book, whenever they mentioned Paul, I just pictured Mike as him. So, like,
Timothy does not look like Mike.
No. But So, to me, Paul is Mike, not Timothy. That's you know, no one else cares, so.
I also really like Jason Momoa. I think he was my favorite character in Dune. Duncan Idaho. He shaved, he looks entirely different. He looks like Maui from Moana. he has a very round face.
Yeah.
His face is not round with the beard. He I looks guess. Terrifying. And then without the beard, he's like, oh, he's a cute Maori guy.
Or Samoan. A cute teddy bear that can curb stop me. Yeah.
And I really like Rebecca Ferguson. I think she's great in everything. She was famous for Mission Impossible and The Greatest Showman.
Greatest Showman.
Which is one of my favorite movies from the last few years.
And I like Oscar Isaacs. I like him in, like, everything but Star Wars, so.
Yeah.
Says something. I liked, what's his name, Stellan Skarsgård? With his fat tech.
Fat tech.
I like that. No, I thought it was a good movie.
Yeah,
I felt like I was watching something that was more akin to, like, Lord of the Rings, like, on that epic scale.
It felt majestic and well-made. It certainly did not feel rushed, but it wasn't confusing.
No.
It's funny, my mom...
Where the book is very confusing.
My mom, who... I mean, she watches a million things on the various streaming sites, but she is not a sci-fi or fantasy person. And she, I guess, read an article about it, so she was saying to me before I went, oh, I need to see it, it's on streaming, I'll watch it. And then when I asked her how it was, and she said, yeah, I made it about 10 minutes, and then it was, there were armies and space, and I couldn't do that. It's like, yeah, what did you think?
Yeah. Pleasant days of our lives.
Yeah. This is the wonderful woman who dragged me to, or I dragged her to the various Star Wars prequels as a kid, and she slept through them all.
Sacrilege.
Yeah. All right, so that's Dune. So, Shang-Chi. I love Shang-Chi. We saw it at different times.
So Steve betrayed me and saw it without me.
And then you betrayed me and skipped James Bond to go see it.
Yeah, but who cares? So, I saw Shang-Chi by myself.
I'm an Awkwafina fan. I find her hysterical.
I like her.
Everything in that movie, she had me rolling.
Yeah, let's calm down a little
bit. I thought she was great.
I you know what it is? It's really not her. It's modern comedy. It's like the meta.
Yeah,
like
it's how Raya and the Last Dragon.
Like, it's
was.
Like commentary. Like
I don't like that.
Like
style.
I don't know what you call it, but it's whatever that is. I don't like.
I don't like that either.
It's
but
like,
I find
it's like commenting on.
It's you take the joke so many levels and then you're like, oh, this is why it's funny because I just said it like that. They're repeating what they said to, you know, wink, wink to the audience.
Yeah, that I don't like. So there's nothing to do with her. But I do like her.
I mean, but she does that.
She does, but others do it
as
well.
I just find her as a person.
Right, I find her a comical person.
Yeah.
I really like Shang-Chi. I thought it was good. I wanted to like it. I heard good things about it.
When I watched it, I said that it was like the East Asian version of Black Panther. Did you agree with me? It seemed like you kind of
disagreed. I didn't really see that at all. It reminded me more of just Avatar: The Last Airbender. Like I'm like, why couldn't M. Night Shyamalan's Avatar have been that?
Because
it would have been cool.
Right.
I mean, I just like looking at the movie. It was just cool to watch.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I enjoyed it.
I really liked the dynamic with his father. That I thought he was one of the better Marvel villains. Because he was clearly bad, but he wasn't so evil that... He wasn't Ronan from Guardians of the Galaxy, where he's literally just a monster... He wasn't a monster, but he was just a big bad who had no depth. It was just he wanted to destroy everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't, you know, whatever the thing is from the first Thor that's just, you know, a monolith that shoots lasers out of its eyes. Like, he had so much depth. It's like Ego from Guardians 2. Like, there's actually a story there relating to the character, and it's just more interesting. Ben Kingsley.
Oh, I liked him.
Makes an appearance.
It's the Mandarin.
And, you know, the little no-faced Chinese creature.
Yeah, which I thought was creepy.
Like, that's an actual Chinese folklore.
Yeah, you showed it to me, and I was like, oh,
yeah, it looks
Disney
it,
didn't make this up
It looks
for,
exactly like it.
It does look exactly like it. I liked the father's, like, top henchman, not the Romanian guy. Like, he looks like the blue spirit from
Avatar.
I thought he was cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
I liked him. No, I don't know. I just liked all the East Asian.
I thought it was mythical. All the martial arts were shot really well, because it didn't seem gimmicky. It didn't seem, you know, like Shrek makes fun of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon with the wire where the camera
weren't they making fun of the Matrix
and then switches around. No, it was Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon and the Matrix, but.
I always took it as making fun of the Matrix.
The Matrix is going, like, bending over backwards.
But right.
Crouching Tiger is where it's the character jumps up and then the camera spins with them frozen. So yeah, Shang-Chi was
good.
Was definitely better than I thought it would be.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess.
As the story just gets louder and louder.
The Eternals, I have...
I
have no, like... It looks stupid to me. I just can't... I don't know.
At this point, I'm intrigued.
See, I'm not intrigued. I'm going to see it, but I'm not intrigued. At all.
But if you're not... Why do you want to see it?
Because it's an MCU film, so and I've seen every single one of them.
You have to drag yourself to the theater?
Yes.
Even if you think it's going to be awful?
Yeah, because I'm going to want to see another movie that I probably will like, and it's going to tie into this Eternal stuff. There's this big, I don't know, big robot at the end or something.
Yeah, I know nothing about Eternals. I know it's filmed by Chloe Zhao, who won Best Director and Best Picture for Nomadland. And I think she's blacklisted by China, so this movie's not going to come out in China. So, just some interesting politics behind the movie.
Did Shang-Chi do well in China?
I don't think it was allowed in China.
Oh, you're saying this was... Oh, okay.
I don't think Shang-Chi was allowed in China.
I thought you were saying the Eternals was filmed by...
Yeah, I'm talking about Eternals, but I also don't think Shang-Chi was shown in China. I think there was some issue with that movie, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because Disney was taking a hit. It's like two Marvel movies in a row, and it's not showing in China.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So.
The rain's louder.
Yeah. So hopefully you can still hear us, because the storm's now getting worse. But I just briefly want to say that I really enjoyed Ridley Scott's The Last Duel, which is the medieval adaptation. It's Ridley Scott's adaptation of a book that came out in the early 2000s about a duel that took place in 14th century France between really non-famous historical figures. And the movie is shown Rashomon style. So you follow Matt Damon's character, you follow Adam Driver's character, and then you follow Matt Damon's wife's character. I think her name is Emily Cormier, the actress. I don't really remember.
No idea.
She's a newcomer. I haven't seen her before. I really enjoyed it. I don't think Chris liked it as much as I did.
No, I mean, I didn't think it was that great. I thought it was okay at best.
But you did really like Ben Affleck in it.
I love Ben Affleck. I could have watched 3 hours of Ben Affleck have be Bacchus, the god of tits and wine. He was so ridiculous looking.
Yeah, I didn't think it was perfect. I definitely thought it was too long. But I really enjoyed it. And I got a kick out of just how awful their hair was. I don't know who did the wardrobe on that.
Like Matt Damon and
Affleck. I tried looking into it, and I think Ridley Scott wanted them to look absurd. Like, I don't think it's historically accurate. I think he was... Which is weird, because the whole movie was very meticulous in its accuracy. But,
mm-hmm.
And he was like, oh, you know, I want them to all be individuals, so give them weird hairstyles. Matt Damon had a mullet, and Ben Affleck had, you know, platinum blonde, ben really Affleck fake looking platinum blonde
hair. When the first time he came out, I'm like, oh my god. But then the more he spoke, the more scenes he was in, I was endeared.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was invested at the end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just wouldn't
Just speaking of duels, so this will tie into Squid Game, but I had a dream about a week and a half ago where I was fighting Alec Baldwin in a duel to the death. Because I was watching Squid Game and 30 Rock back to back. So after a month of watching both those shows, I guess I, you know, put the survival game to the death with Jack Donaghy. And I dreamt about Alec Baldwin wanting to kill me, and then I had to kill him first. And I woke up very shaken because, you know, don't normally have dreams about killing Alec Baldwin.
You think you're a prophet.
And then I saw the last duel, I think, 2 or 3 days later, and watching the duel at the end between Adam Driver and Matt Damon, I said, oh, this is bringing back memories that I just got the other day. And then, not 4 days later, Alec Baldwin accidentally kills somebody on the set of his movie, and it's just a very strange dream.
Do you think he prophesied it?
I guess maybe it's a warning of never actually meet Alec Baldwin, that he's a danger to society.
Or you think you have a power? I don't think you
do. I mean, I think this is the first time I've ever dreamt something that then came true.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, not that this came true, but played into real life. You're more likely to have premonitions.
I hope so. I don't know if I am.
With your elvish foresight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the last duel. I hope it's the last duel.
And then the last movie we saw in theaters was a movie we were both really looking forward to and wound up being quite disappointing. It still has my favorite movie title, I think, of all time.
I agree. I do love
the Many Saints of Newark. Which, so it's a prequel to The Sopranos, but it's not just a prequel. It's also this, it's about characters that are never in The Sopranos. So it's like 2 or 3 movies shoved into one.
It had no momentum. This is my critique of it. It had no momentum. It just felt like it was going nowhere. I don't know. It had no energy.
See, I agree with you, but I still enjoyed it. I was never bored during it.
Oh, see, I was.
Because
Newark riot should have been like the climax of that movie, and it was kind of like, oh, it just happened.
It would have been the climax of the movie if they didn't shove Tony Soprano in it. Or at least Michael Gandolfini. Because he had to be a teenager, and he was not that old during the Newark riots.
Or I don't know, they could have made the Newark riots more momentous. Important. I don't know, like, it just was like, okay, like, Dickie Moltisanti is driving around. No, he drives through the riots. Like, I don't know. Yeah. He's just very...
Well, he wasn't just driving through the riots. He was trying to bury a body during the riots. It played into the plot.
It did, but it just... I don't know. None of it went anywhere. It was just like, okay, like...
I mean, I also think, compared to the show 20 years ago, they have to be a lot more careful with racial issues. So the riots always had to be kind of a critique. You know, 2021, you can't just show an all-out riot. You have to show, you know, the politics behind it and be sympathetic towards, was it Leslie Odom, Aaron Burr from Hamilton?
Mm-hmm.
Like, his character we had to follow, and, you know, he got involved in the riots, and since we were following him as a protagonist of the movie, it's, oh, now the riot is, you know,
yeah, his a positive. Whole storyline felt very shoehorned into the movie.
Yeah. But I think they...
I mean, I liked his character, but...
They want to do a series that's probably going to focus on him.
I don't know. See, I can care less about that.
And tie Tony into it. Because there's talk about doing a prequel, and David Chase said he'd be on board if the director, I think it's Terrence Winter, that if he was involved as well, he would totally go for it. And I think HBO and Warner Brothers really wants another Sopranos because it was so popular and everybody wants nostalgia. And this goes back to Dune, where I have a feeling they're going to okay a Sopranos show based on a pretty crappy movie, and they're going to pass on Dune Part 2 when Dune's a masterpiece.
Now, this is your theory, or do you
have... No, it's like... my theory just based on how, you know, life is at this point in time, that we can't have good things. And I definitely think HBO wants a Sopranos thing. Just like they're doing 25 different Game of Thrones prequels. Now, oh, we can do a Sopranos prequel too.
Which, by the way, I want to say, I am very excited for. Yeah, no see, one else
I,
is.
See, I don't care.
See, I don't care how bad the last season or two of Game of Thrones was. I was very invested in the world. And all I had to see was that trailer. And I'm like, I'm sold. I'll be there.
Yeah, so I'm the complete opposite. I really don't care at all. I'll watch it, but if I
but forgot about it... But if you liked Game of Thrones, like, at its best, it's like, I feel like you should care.
But I feel like... I don't know. It's like a crappy father, you know. This is not based on life experience, but, you know. Oh, I missed your baseball game. Here's $5. Like, go buy yourself ice cream. Oh, I'm a great father.
Benioff and Weiss doing it?
No, but HBO... They let the bad show happen. The ending of the original show happen, and now they're like, "Oh, look at all this other stuff we're distracting you with."
Didn't Benioff and Weiss not want to do it either? Like they made a deal with the devil, aka Disney, and then they didn't get it.
Right, but HBO
Mephistopheles.
HBO could have forced them to do more episodes.
Right. No, I agree.
I'm not engaged at the moment. I'd rather have 10 different Star Wars shows than a Game of Thrones prequel.
Because I also think the ending of Sopranos, like, the last season wasn't good either. I think the last two seasons probably weren't that great. So I kind of thought that the Many Saints in Newark was just kind of like the film version of not going anywhere for a Sopranos story. And I thought Sopranos peaked earlier than...
I'm enjoying The Sopranos more watching it again. I'm on season 5, but season 3 and 4 I think are the peak.
I mean, it wasn't a train wreck like Game of Thrones, but
right.
Game of Thrones is bad by the end of it, but
yeah.
I'm not defending
it. I'm not writing the new show off. I will watch it, but I'm not. I saw the trailer and I shrugged. So, I think that's all the movies we've seen lately.
That's all I have to say about that.
So now we're going to go into the TV portion. So now we'll move on to the Netflix portion. I never really watch new Netflix shows.
No,
I didn't.
It was like in the same day that you told me about Squid Game, I went to school and my students were like, Squid Game. I'm like, Squid Game? Like Squidward? And then the amount of Squidward memes, by the way, which I love.
That was about a week after my sister, who's big on K-dramas, you know, Korean dramas. I guess Netflix has a deal with Korean production companies or something that they have an influx of K-dramas. So they premiere on Korean TV, but then they're streaming around the world. So my sisters watch a bunch. And I don't know if... I think there's a character... The character in Squid Game who basically swindles the people playing that game with the paper football in the subway, he's a very famous Korean actor. My sister really liked him. So maybe she heard about him being in another show and then she watched it, or it was just big on Netflix. I don't know. Because I saw it pop up a few times and I said, I don't know what this is.
But if he was that big of an actor, like, he's not in the show.
Oh, it's like a cameo.
Right.
So I really didn't know what it was about. I kind of insinuated, oh, it's like Hunger Games, and then I watched the first episode, and then I was intrigued. I watched the second episode. I watched it with my fiance, and I was definitely into it by the second episode.
I can quote you, and you text me, well, I'm engaged. Okay.
So we watched it with the Korean subtitles, because my sister... yelled at me in all caps over a text saying, watch it with Korean, don't watch it with English.
Can I?
So I read that message and I laughed because I would watch a foreign show with subtitles anyway. I think you disagree.
Yeah, I hate subtitles because I'm missing some of the visuals of a show or a movie or whatever if I'm reading it. There's just subtle things about what you can watch that you're not getting, even if you're reading it quickly.
I agree with
and,
that.
And I throw, and for all the uppity snits who want to say, oh, well, you need to listen to it in Korean and read the subtitles because that's not the correct way to view it. It's like, well, if you're going to be that uppity about it, why don't you just learn Korean so you can listen to it in the original version, because you're clearly not doing it correctly anyway.
You're still a step
It's still removed. Derivative, so
right.
Get, like, please, like, go away.
You're not wrong.
I know I'm not wrong.
But
these are why they're my opinions.
But I still think when you're reading the subtitles, you're still getting the actual audio of the actors. And with Squid Game especially, the actors are emoting in a certain way that the English dub doesn't replicate. Because I watched it all in Korean, and then I watched a few episodes in English with you, and it was still good in English, but the acting was definitely lesser. And just to compare it, I watched Dario Argento. He's a famous Italian horror director. I watched his movie from the 70s called Deep Red, which was shot in English, but dubbed in Italian. So if you just have the DVD and play it, it's in Italian. And you have to, if you want to watch it in English, you have to change the settings and everything. But even watching it in English, I was telling you this the other day, the Italian film industry at the time, they would just dub everything anyway, so that they're filming the entire movie in English, but they're not recording the dialogue on the set, so they're re-recording all the English dialogue afterwards. So the dialogue still doesn't match the mouth movements. So it's jarring either way.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas at least watching something like Squid Game, and most foreign movies now, if you watch it in the original language, it at least matches their mouth, so it doesn't just sound like voices in the ether. Because that when I watch Squid Game in English, it's like, well, there's just English voices talking over something that's not in English. Like, I'm still removed. It's still taking me out of it because it's not matching their mouths.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm distracted by that, whereas you're distracted by reading the words. I'm distracted by the audio not matching the mouth movements.
Right. Which I'm fine by, but it's like all, like, there's clearly a hierarchy of, like, how to view this, and it's like, oh, how did you watch it? And it's like, oh, well, if you said I watch it in English, it's like you get shit on
right.
for
well,
it.
But
it's
aren't
like,
you a stickler for doing things the right way?
Right, but doing this the right way would be to listen to it in Korean.
Yeah.
No subtitles. No, listen to it in Korean.
As an English viewer, the right way to watch something
well, then
in another
you
language...
can't watch it correctly, then.
No,
because
you're...
Because
now you're
not
now
getting...
You're
no,
difficult.
Because you're not getting the same... You are not getting the same experience that a Korean person gets
well,
watching.
You don't need you don't need the exact experience, but to get a more accurate experience is at least you're hearing the language and you're getting the English interpretation of it. So you're still closer to the actual interpretation than now it's two steps removed, where you're not hearing the Korean anymore and you're getting the English interpretation.
But I know what you're saying, but it's like, if I can't understand the Korean, then why, I understand, like, okay, these are the actors that are portraying it, but I can't understand them, so I don't know.
But you're still experiencing... It's like, you could watch Apocalypto, which is done in ancient Mayan, or whatever that mm-hmm. language is. You could watch that movie on mute, and it would still have the same effect than reading the subtitles. So there's not much dialogue, and it's all about the aesthetics and the culture that's being shown on screen than what you're reading. If they did it in English... Sure, okay, that would be fine, but you're losing that, like, wow, I'm in the Mayan jungle, and 15, 19 or whatever.
Right, but I think that's also the point of the film. I'm not supposed to be immersed in Korea or Korean, I don't know, like it's not a Korean culture film.
Right.
It's a show about killing people.
Right. I guess I mean if you're listening
to I don't like subtitles. Like I don't like them. I don't like reading subtitles. I hate it.
I mean I have a poor attention span, so watching a movie with subtitles takes a lot out of me. But I still enjoy subtitled movies more than dub movies. And that's me.
I mean, I probably... I don't know. Because I've seen a bunch of foreign movies with subtitles.
Right.
It's not like I've never done it. I just don't... Like, I don't know. It's more of a commitment to do. Whereas, like, watching Squid Game, for me, it was like, okay, I can just put this on and listen to it and watch it like a show.
Right. Right. No, it was definitely more of a, you know, needed multiple senses.
And I liked it. I enjoyed the show.
So, I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you've seen Squid Game. It's about Gi-hun. He's a Korean.
I have no idea what his name is.
I don't know all their names, but
I know Seb-yuk.
Gi-hun is a he's a pretty poor father. He's a gambler. He's down on his luck. He takes advantage of his mother, steals her money to go gamble, and then he doesn't buy his daughter a birthday present. And he's invited to join this game where he can win money. And he shows up, and he's number 456. And he's the last person, so there's 455 other people. And spoiler alert, the first game, they're playing children's games. So all these, you know, people that are used to gambling and doing things, they think it's a piece of cake, they're going to walk out with a lot of money. And the first game is red light, green light, and 200-something people are shot when they fail to pause during red light. And, and that's the first episode. And then it goes on from there.
Is that the most famous game in the show?
Well, it's the most, I think, global. Because right. A lot of the games are
Korean centered, yeah. But it's all, I feel like it's the only game I've seen portrayed in memes and things online.
Well, it's also the first episode. I think people don't want to spoil the show.
I don't know. I feel like people are not, could care less about spoiling things for other people.
I don't know. I'm
glad because it wasn't spoiled for me. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I really liked the show. I thought it was
a lot of memes.
I thought it made Breaking Bad look like Bob Ross in some instances in terms of its intensity.
Oh, see, I disagree with that. See, you had texted me saying it's like stressful and this and that. And then on my way to work one day, like, there was a guy on the radio saying, like, I was sweating during one episode and I was on the edge of my seat. I watched the whole show and I thought there was some tense stuff, but
Because you'd probably be murdering people if you were in the game.
That piggy bank would be mine.
See, I would have the moral quandaries. Watching each episode, I was thinking to myself, what the hell would I do in this situation? Probably die.
Well, I mean, some of it's also like bad luck, I guess spoiler alert, whatever, but the second to last game with the bridge, like if you're first on that game, you're screwed.
Yeah,
like I don't,
oh yeah,
like, you can't morally screw your way out of this.
The whole game the whole situation was not fair. The rules.
No, I mean, they didn't tell people they were going to be shot.
All the masked figures, they kept saying that, oh, everybody has a fair shot at winning this money. And it's no, you don't. You didn't tell anyone that you would die if you lost the first game. And then for the second game.
But I guess that is fair. I mean, no one was told, so they were all operating on a fair playing
field. And at least that game was actually about your actions. But then all the games after that had to do with luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
You had the breaking the shapes out of the sugar, which, you know, some were much easier than others.
Right.
And then Tug of War, okay, so that...
Tug of War probably stressed me the most.
Yeah.
Because I'm not physically strong, so it's just like...
What stressed me out was the glass floor, because I... Just being in that situation, you have the choice to pick one of two things. It's like heads or tails, and one will kill you, and one will make you live for like 5 minutes before you die when you take the next step.
Yeah.
Because if you're number one, you have to do it 16 times in a row.
You're screwed. You're absolutely screwed if you're number one.
Which is why that stresses me out. I was thoroughly stressed out during that episode.
I thought there were tense moments, but Breaking Bad was just like, oh my god. No, I was a lot more stressed. So I was strung out with Breaking Bad. I really liked Squid Game, though.
I hope they do another show.
Were you satisfied with the ending? The last episode?
Partly. The only thing that I wanted closure on was about the cop storyline. He infiltrates, and the last you see of him is in the second to last episode where he's shot, but he's not shot. I think he's shot in the shoulder and he fell.
Yeah.
And I thought the next episode he would still be alive. And
well, did
they
you
never
like
followed up on it?
Did you like Gone Boo's explanation for why he did it?
Yeah, I think that made sense.
So you didn't agree with Frank?
I don't remember what Frank said.
Frank said that it was just too simple. He's like, oh, he did it because he was bored.
I mean, what are rich people doing right now? They're all shooting rockets into space.
All of them. They're all,
yeah.
They're all
I could see, you know...
No, I could
maybe
see them doing it, but...
A bunch of rich people... Because what I don't understand... That 455 people, it's more than that because a few of the guards were killed too. So it's like 460 people just disappeared at the same time. Wouldn't that lead to some explanation from, you know, police and...
Well, the show doesn't have a very good image of Korean police.
Yeah, well, just like Parasite, it's the whole... It's a critique of Korean society that it's unfair and, you know.
It's like, get on board, everyone. Like, it's not just you.
Now, would you willingly... Okay, so they swindle you into joining the first time and you somehow survive the game. And then in the second episode, they all vote whether they want to leave or stay. Would you vote to leave or stay?
I'd leave.
But then would you go back?
Probably not.
Because... I think it's 200. It's 201 people, and it's convenient because it's like, oh, it's 100 and 100, and who's the last vote going to be? But then I think it's something like 187 people come back within a week.
I don't think I would have came back.
Yeah, it would have been one of the smart
14 people. After red light, green light, I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I would.
Money's not worth.
I'm also too lazy. It's like that whole running aspect of red light, green light. Like, there's a lot of work. This is exertion. No, but I don't think I would have come back. However, if I did go back, it was exciting.
You know, if we were in Squid Game together, we would have been in, when they said team up, it would have been like,
you.
I know Chris.
I texted Steve about, I'm like, are you Gone Boo? And he's like, would you steal my marbles? And it was just such a stupid text.
And the answer is yes.
No, I did not. That is not what I said.
You did not say that. What did you say?
Oh my God, I will read my messages right now.
No, what did you say? I don't remember what you said.
I said, no, I don't think so. I would play fairly.
Okay, but you'd still play and hope you'd win.
Well, what else were we going to do?
Not play and both die.
That's true. I guess did anyone do that? I don't think anyone did that in the show.
No. No, the closest it came was the North Korean girl and the other girl she willingly gave.
Right. No, But what else could I have done? I guess we could have done that. That would have been.
So that was pretty crappy that
You can say it.
The most annoying character on the show was the one really loud mouthed woman. Was she actually a hooker?
I have no idea. She was just really annoying.
She was so annoying that nobody liked her, so she didn't have a partner. And because it was odd numbers, she was left out, and everyone, you think she's going to be killed because she's left out, and she wound up surviving.
Well, she wound up not having to play that
right,
game.
Which I thought was not fair.
It's not fair, no.
But that comes down to everything's not fair.
Right. No, it's also not fair. That, like, I guess in a kid's game, it's like, oh, you don't have a partner. It's like, now you can't play.
Yeah.
So, well, in this game, it's good that you can't play.
Yeah.
I liked it, though. I thought it was...
Yeah, cool. I thought it was definitely worth the watch.
Yeah. I didn't think it was... I mean, it was violent, but I didn't think it was, like, as terrible as it could be.
No, it was more the situations that they were put in than the graphic violence. It was the nonchalance of the violence, where people were just being shot left and right.
Mm.
Maybe I'm just a unfazed American that stuff in movies doesn't bother me.
Right.
Especially when it's kind of done tongue-in-cheek. I guess some people would find that horrifying, but I don't know, when you play, I don't know, like blues music or whatever song they played to 200 people being shot, it's Tarantino-esque.
Yeah, no, I think it was kind of like Kill Bill, but I enjoyed it.
I definitely liked it more than Midnight Mass, which
so
is the
for
show
our
that,
last show.
Which is the focus of the
was
episode.
Was it also Netflix?
Yeah.
So our last show. I don't know who directed it.
Yeah, so Midnight Mass was... I think it was directed... All the episodes were directed by Mike Flanagan, who made The Haunting of Hill House and The Haunting of Bly Manor for Netflix. But he also made the movies Oculus and Gerald's Game and one or two other horror movies. So his focus is mostly on horror. I really liked Haunting of Hill House.
So did I.
But then we both tried to watch Haunting of Bly Manor, and
it was very dull. It was very boring. But I really liked Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah, and we watched Oculus. I think we both read The Haunting of Hill House, the book by Shirley Jackson. Or you never finished it.
I didn't finish it. It was so boring that I couldn't get through it.
I listened to the audiobook.
Oh.
And I really did not like it.
Did it get interesting?
No.
Okay.
No, it really did not.
It was
not.
Just like, oh, the color of the wall is green in my room, and it's red in your room. It's like, oh my god, this isn't even a long book, and I can't finish it.
If this makes me sound like an idiot, I could not stand it.
I read Hell House, which I also didn't really like, but I read it.
Was that Richard Matheson?
I don't remember. Was a few years ago.
But the show at least was updated, where it was in modern times, and they kept cross-cutting between, I guess, the 80s, when all the kids were little, and then the 2000s, where they were adults. And apart from the first episode, it wasn't really scary. It was more...
Yeah, most of it wasn't scary.
I mean, there were some frightening things that happened, but I think it was only one or two jump scares in the mostly in the first episode.
Yeah, the first episode was scariest, of Hill House.
Yeah, and...
And then there was a few things, but most of it was kind of just a drama.
Yeah, and Flanagan's really good with his cinematography and his dialogue and everything. But I think there was one episode in Hill House that was made to look like it was one shot, one take, so it was filmed like Birdman or 1917, where it clearly, there were edits, but they were masked. And, he's showy. So Midnight Mass definitely has that showy feel. And the premise of Midnight Mass, they never explain where it's taking place, but there's this island community just off the coast of some U.S. state. And there is only 120 people or so. And they all happen to be extremely traditional Vatican II Catholics. This is where we get into we put our Catholic hats on. The show opens with the main character is this guy in his 20s named Riley, who had been in jail because he killed, I guess, an ex-girlfriend, or he killed a girlfriend because he was drunk driving. So he was in prison, and he's haunted by her.
Was it a girlfriend? I thought it was just... I don't remember it being connected to him, but...
I thought it was a girl in his car.
Okay, I don't remember, but okay.
He killed a woman...
Right.
Drunk driving, and he went to prison. So he comes home, and he's in AA, he's a recovering alcoholic, and the most frightening thing early on in the show is that whenever he goes to sleep, there's a shot of him, like, in a rowboat, and then it's a shot, he's lying sideways, so then it's a shot of what he's seeing, which is, like, the sideways view of a dead girl who has, like, glass on her face. And it's, like, a hard cut with a loud sound. So that's the big scare early on. It happens a few times. And then you start meeting various characters. He interacts with his parents, who are both super religious, and they can't really forgive him. And he meets his, I don't know if it's his girlfriend from when he was a kid, or if they were just friends and kind of...
I took it that they were friends, but...
Who's...
But they have chemistry.
Yeah, I don't know the actress's name, but she's married to Mike Flanagan, and she was in...
Hill House.
Yeah. And there's this small church where the priest was an elderly fellow, and he left to go on a pilgrimage, I guess, to the Holy Land. And now there's a new priest, this mysterious priest who shows up, who's his replacement. And weird stuff starts happening on the island. In the first episode, I think a bunch of cats are killed. And the second episode opens with the mayor and a few people, like, looking on the beach, and it's done in one take. It's like a 5-minute shot going around to all the characters. And he's being showy. So that's the premise of the show. The priest shows up, and then he starts doing interesting things. It's like miracles happen, and he's just strange. So going in, I wasn't planning on watching it because I saw, oh, it has to do with the priest. It's probably going to be anti-Catholic. I just don't want to deal with this. And then I saw a Vox article that kind of went viral on Twitter that was saying how the person writing it was an atheist, and he or she said that it was offensive as an atheist that he couldn't watch a horror show that was so religious. So I didn't want to read the whole article because I didn't want things to be spoiled, but I read a few excerpts and I thought, well, this is really silly. Why can't you watch something? I've seen plenty of things that are not Catholic that I watched. I could deal with it. So I gave it a chance, and a few episodes, it was like, okay, they weren't perfect in every aspect of Catholicism, but they definitely made an effort.
Yeah, they did.
Like, they mentioned Ordinary Time, they mentioned Ash Wednesday, they
mentioned vestment colors.
They knew basics like that, but then early on it's Ash Wednesday, and then they're having a potluck after Ash Wednesday mass or service, and it's like, you fast on Ash Wednesday if you're Catholic, you know that. It was like they're trying, but they're also not. So do you want to give your spiel? Do we want to, I guess, talk about what happens in the show? Or do you want to just go into our view of the show?
I mean, I would just kind of go into the view of the show. I mean, right. If you want to give, like, a very short...
All right, so what happens is the priest is actually the old priest. On his journey into the Middle East, he came into a cave where he met a demon or a vampire.
Or an angel.
He thinks it's an angel. We don't know if he's genuine in his belief that it's an angel, or if he's lying and he knows it's a demon. But
it's very clearly a demon.
Yeah, it's...
And I said this to you. I said, I can't remember the last time I saw a demon portrayed in, like, a movie or a show that looked so classic. It looked right out of Paradise Lost. You know, with the big bat wings, and... I mean, I guess he didn't have horns, but, like, he looked like a demon.
Yeah. If there was a it was mistake. Like Nosferatu with bat wings.
Yeah, which looked cool, but it was unnerving, and then he... I would say the priest does think it's an angel, because he starts seeing a halo around the demon's head, which
right.
was... Interesting.
So the demon gives him his own blood.
Right.
And then he becomes young. And he returns to his home parish, and he's this young priest, and he's lying at first, saying, I'm this different priest, Monsignor Pruitt is sick, and he becomes friendly with, like, the head of the parish council, Beverly. Susan. Yeah, we were calling her Susan, because the meme online is Susan of the parish council.
Her name's Bev.
Yeah, she's Bev something, and she does not come off looking good. And eventually the priest is outed and winds up accidentally killing a parishioner, this alcoholic who was going to him for help. And Beb and a few of the other townspeople walk in on the priest, like, feasting on him.
Eating his head.
And he tells them that he's been, you know, joined with an angel, and because they're such zealots, they believe him. So now they're his underlings, and they try to help the priest with his dealings, and they're keeping all this crazy stuff under wraps because they don't want to frighten people, because they think that, you know, he's the second coming, and it's all just corrupt. And some interesting stuff happens. I definitely liked aspects of the show, but by the end of the season it was just so absurdly in your face with its messaging that at first I would have recommended it, and I just can't recommend it now. So I don't know if you want to say anything before.
I'm trying to remember. I thought it was pretty anti-religious, anti-theistic, anti-Catholic earlier on than you. Right.
I guess I was like, okay, they're trying to get the religious feel. So most movies that are nihilistic, atheistic, whatever, they have a message, they're anti-religion, they don't care to get the religion right, because if we show it in a positive light, then therefore we're being positive, we have to show it negative from the beginning. Whereas this show is kind of showing it positively in that they're getting it accurate, but by making it accurate they're being underhanded, because they're showing all the religious characters being just bad people.
Right, yeah, and I guess that's, to the extent I would say, it's inaccurate. It's like, I guess they're getting, like, basic kind of facts and things correct. Vestment colors and, like, holidays and whatever. But, I don't know, just from early on I could tell it was getting very, like, anti-religious. One of the main characters is the police chief, who's Muslim.
Yeah.
And so he's the only non-Catholic on the island, and...
Well, his son,
But
then his son starts, you know...
So the police chief is Muslim, and because the son is growing up in this, like, very ultra-Catholic town with, like, 100 people in it, the son wants to go to Mass, and because he's hearing about all these, like, healings that are happening and this and that, so... I don't know, just the way, so they're painting Catholicism in a very poor light, and they're painting Islam not, like they're not using the same critique, the same level of critique with Islam that they are with Catholicism.
Early on, though, the police chief doesn't come off open-minded, though. He still comes off like a religious zealot. It's just less than the Christianity.
Right, I guess he just ultimately... ends up
there was one scene later on, I think it was the second to last episode, where the doctor character, who, you know, is not a believing woman, but her mother has miraculously been healed and is turning younger, and she takes blood from her mother, but when the blood's in the sunlight it bursts into flame, so the doctor's freaked out, and she goes to the police, and this is after the main characters think that there's a vampire or something. So she goes to the police chief and she says, please investigate the church. And the police chief just launches into this 7-minute long monologue, which there are many monologues in this show that are just single takes where the character just spews political messaging. And it, it just blows my mind. But the response from the police chief is, do you know why I took this job here? It's because I experienced horrible bigotry after 9/11 when I became a cop, and then I was basically blacklisted after I reported like a fellow cop for being racist. And it's like, Angela, what does this have to do with there being a vampire?
What does this have to do with there being a demon flying around?
And then the last episode, it just, so halfway through the show, Riley the alcoholic, he and his friend, her last name is Green. I don't remember her first name.
I don't know. His special lady friend.
They're both talking, and she's religious, and he's not, and she just experienced a miscarriage, and they're both talking about God, and he's like, I don't believe, and she says, well, what happens when you die? And it's literally 1 7-minute take, zooming closely into his face as he's talking, and it's all about, oh, I think our brains are just releasing these toxins and we're experiencing all our loved ones and that we just kind of become atoms and whatever. And then it's, now what do you believe? And then it's the same type of shot with her where she's saying the opposite, where she thinks, you know, when you die, you go to heaven and you see all your loved ones and she's going to meet her baby and the baby's going to love her. And it's like, okay. It's like, all right. So you're making him like an absolute atheist and her fully religious, even after she experienced a terrible loss. Then, I mean, spoiler, Riley becomes, he gets attacked by the demon, becomes a vampire. He's experiencing all these paranormal things. He can't go in sunlight. And then he sacrifices himself, where he goes in the sun on purpose, so he bursts into flames, so he could prove to, you know, the other characters that this demon's around. So the main characters know that there's a supernatural evil element in town. They witness this vampire feasting on people and demonic imagery and all this stuff. And then in the last episode, as the girl is being feasted on by the vampire, it flashes back to her monologue. And instead of her saying, oh, I'm going to be with my baby in heaven, she's now basically parroting what Riley had originally said, where, oh, I'm one with the grass, we're all atoms, I'm going to be one with the universe. And it does not make sense in the world of the show, because she's literally being eaten by a demon. So if a demon exists in the world, how is your response, God doesn't exist, we're all atoms, this is all science? It does not make any sense.
It's okay, so, and I've said, well, I haven't said this on the podcast, I guess, but I've said this to you a million times, that modern spiritual but not religious spirituality is just repackaged Eastern religion into Western culture. And what I mean by that is people that have grown up, you know, historically, but they've grown up in Christian or Catholic or whatever religious households, and they get older and they get kind of disillusioned with it. They all kind of go New Age spirituality or spiritual but not religious, whatever. And what it really is just Hinduism or Buddhism, that type of worldview repackaged into our culture. And I thought in kind of a twisted sense, I thought they did a good job of portraying what that is, because it's very nihilistic by the end of it. It's like, you know, we're all the same. We're all stardust. We're all a part of
the show, or that view in general.
The show, I think, did it. I think the show did a good job of portraying that viewpoint of what their ultimate reality is.
It just doesn't make sense in a world where vampires exist. Not just vampires, but specifically like demon vampires, because you're tying it into the whole religion.
Well, right. I mean, in a certain sense, I guess it can make sense if you're just going to say that it doesn't matter. But if I'm led to care about what's going on, then it kind of does make sense. Yeah. And we are led to care about what's going on. Because, you know, there's the two younger kids that are leaving the island. But, I don't know, I took this show as a much, I don't know, as a kind of a commentary and critique on Catholicism, as, like, you know, a commentary on the sex abuse crisis, which I think is, you know, demonic. I think the idea that the priest, that's kind of this holy guy that's inadvertently like feasting on people, you know, without people knowing, and then the people in the church hierarchy, like the people at the parish council level, know what's going on and they're enabling him. I think it's all a commentary on the sex abuse crisis.
Yeah.
But it's also, they're shoehorning all this kind of, you know, I don't know, spiritual but not religious mindset into it, and
it's just too much.
It was a little way too heavy-handed, especially like her monologue dying when she was parroting what Riley said about, you know, that we're all part of the universe and we're going to return to it, and there's no, there. I don't remember exactly what she said, but it was like, there's, you know, we don't exist, I think, and like just kind of these ideas of like, you know, we're not, like, everything's an illusion. It's, I want to say the Matrix, but, you know,
as that idea, demon vampire priest is eating her.
Right. As the demon is eating her. And I guess maybe to their credit, they're saying she's realizing, look, like, it doesn't matter. And that if all of this is fake, if all of this is an illusion, then this fake demon that's eating my fake body doesn't matter.
But is it saying that? Because it's saying, okay, so maybe Christianity's gotten it wrong, that we're all, you know, when I die, I'm going to become stardust. But that still doesn't explain why there's a vampire eating the person. I think including the paranormal and the supernatural, it kind of invalidates the whole scientific explanation. Because I don't care about what you think the science is. What's the science behind the vampire?
Right.
You're not giving me that. You're trying to tell me, oh, the blood, you know, is influenced by all this stuff. Okay, that's the blood, but what about the 4,000-year-old vampire that the priest found in the cave?
Right, and what I think, I guess, probably what the show does wrong is that they're mixing this commentary on Catholicism with the demon and X, Y, and Z with all of this other, with their philosophy.
If they left the philosophy out, I think it would actually work as a criticism of the church.
I agree. I think if the philosophy was left out, it would work better. Or I think if the supernatural was left out, the philosophy might work better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think putting the two together,
it's just too many ideas.
It was a little too contradictory.
And it also escalated too quickly. So there was always this element of, you know, like you said, a critique of the sex abuse where the priest is, they're enabling the priest and they're covering things up and there's evil happening. But then the last two episodes, it's just all out mayhem and fine. But now on top of all the mayhem, now you're backtracking to the, we're nothing when we die. It's like, well, you're not showing that.
right, exactly. They're not showing that.
And then there was a critique, which I also thought was heavy-handed. I kind of laughed at it, that all the townspeople there, they're now vampires, and they're killing all the people who aren't vampires. And the altar boy and one of the parish council members, they bump into each other, and the kid says, oh, I think I killed my mom. Because they realize they're all going to die, because there's no shelter, and it's, the sun is coming out, and the parish council guy says, yeah, I think we've all done bad things. And the altar boy says, do you forgive me? And the parish council guy says, I forgive you. And then they basically hold hands and walk away. It's like, oh, haha, Catholic confession is a big joke.
Yeah.
Just too much in the last hour.
I also just, it floors me that, you know, Catholicism and Christianity get railroaded, but Islam gets the free pass. It's like, if your ultimate philosophy is Hindu and Buddhism, and like the main girl in the show was saying, you can't at the same time hold Islam to be
a standard bearer.
Yeah, because Islam and Christianity
are way more similar.
Right, exactly. They're much more similar to each other than either of them are to the Eastern religions. So I don't know. It's just like, I thought that was kind of stupid, but I don't think any of them understand Islam at all, so.
Yeah, whatever. I think it's all just the political.
Right. And I thought the way the main Susan from the Parish Council, Bev, died, I thought artistically was done well, because when she dies, it keeps switching from the Muslim police chief who's praying on the prayer mat to Mecca, to the east, right? He's bowing and doing all the prostrations, and it keeps cutting from that to Bev, who is not wanting the sun to come up because she's going to burn to death, and she's inadvertently doing this essentially the same prostrations on her knees. Like, right. I did kind of like that, because it's like, oh, she's reduced to the same state as the quote-unquote terrorist that she called.
Right. I still like aspects of the show, but...
I think some of it was done very well, yeah. But it's just, its treatment of, I don't know, Catholicism and Christianity, its treatment of Islam, and then its treatment of Eastern philosophies, I just, like, I don't know.
Just too much at once.
Yeah, it was too much at once.
So you want to watch Bly Manor anytime soon?
I don't even remember what episode we got to.
It was like 2 or 3. It was just not engaging.
No, we watched more than 2 or 3.
I think it was only 7 or 8 episodes.
I feel like we watched like 4 episodes.
I don't think we got that far. I don't remember any ghosts. Because I read Turn of the Screw, and I watched The Innocents. And they were... I mean, Turn of the Screw is more like Haunting of Hill House, where it's kind of slow because it was written in the 1800s. And The Innocents is the film adaptation from the 60s. Still kind of slow, but definitely engaging. And Bly Manor was just like, oh my god, this is not interesting. So Midnight Mass was definitely, I was into. I enjoyed it. I guess it was 7 episodes. I enjoyed it for 5 episodes. And then the last 2, I started laughing.
Mm-hmm.
So, the person, the Vox journalist who wrote the review.
I can't figure that out. It's like, if you couldn't see that this was right up your alley.
I said, Horseshoe Theory, which is the famous view that, you know, extremists on the right and the left are basically the same person, mm-hmm. because it boomerangs around, that it's Horseshoe Theory for me, except the Vox person and me hate this show for completely different reasons. They think it's too religious, and I think it's not religious.
It's just that they
all
can't see, they're almost too shallow to realize that it's criticizing religion.
Right, right.
They just see the aesthetics of religion, and it's like, oh, I can't handle this. It's like, okay. Now I know what to do when to upset you.
All right, so that was Midnight Mass and Squid Game and Dune and The Last Duel and Shang-Chi and the Multisantis of Newark. Thank you for listening, and hopefully this is up before Halloween. So have a happy Halloween.